Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Eid Mubarak to all our listeners out there. How is celebration your community? Of course, we are still in the Eid mood. I can imagine the joy on the faces of the children and the mood of the parents. Not to worry, it's all for fun, love and bonding within the family. With this, I welcome you to another exciting edition of Everyday Muslim, a program that dwells on our day-to-day activities as individuals. As you all know, we invite renowned guests who shed more light on topics that pertain to us all, not limited to Muslims alone. I am Rashida Adetun Okeolanio, and I'll be your only host for today, as my co-host, Sekina, is unavailably absent for today. Everyday Muslim is powered by Muslim Public Affairs Center, MPAC, in collaboration with Women Radio 91.7 FM. Our topic for discussion today is blasphemy, a controversial issue, and we have two guests in the house to discuss this controversial issue with us. But before introducing them, let's settle down with this nasheed, because we are still in the Eid mood. Eid Mubarak from Mazin.
Waking up in the morning to takbirat al-Eid. I put on my finest shoes and my finest Eid outfit. Calling up my la-la-la loved ones, wishing them Eid al-Sa'id. Jump in the car and head to the masjid to pray Salah to Eid. The day we've all been waiting for, a wave of joy has made sense from above. Celebrate.
Welcome back. If you are just joining us, this is still your program, Everyday Muslim, on Women Radio 91.7 FM. My guests are in the house, and I'll be introducing them in few seconds. Everyday Muslim is open to sponsorship and advert placement. I'll be starting with Sheikh Nuruddin Lemo. He's in the house. Assalamu alaikum wa barakatuh. Sheikh Nuruddin Lemu is a director of research and training at the Dawa Institute of Nigeria, the Assistant General Secretary of Islamic Education Trust, IET MENA. He is a technical advisor, Nigerian Environmental Society, Niger State Branch, a founding member of the Regional Center of Expertise, MENA, and a member of advisory board of the New Horizon College, MENA. He has been a member, National Awards Committee, Ford Foundation Jubilee Transparency Awards, Nigeria and Teacher Trainer, Nur Al-Huda, Islamic College, Sydney, Australia. Sheikh Lemu is the Director of Development Initiative of Western Africa, DIWA, the Interfaith Activity and Partners of Peace, and a member of various committees of Jamaatul Nusrat Islam and the Dawa Coordination Council of Nigeria. He was one of those nominated by Nigerian Supreme Council for Islamic Affairs to represent Nigerian Muslims at the last national conference, CONFAB 2014. I have with me also Ustaz Abdulkabir Nasir. Ustaz Abdulkabir Nasir is a Khatib of Al Jazeera Islamic Center, Badore, Lagos. He holds a higher national diploma in applied chemistry and has traditionally learned the Islamic sciences. Wow. He researches in Maliki jurisprudence and Tamilian thought. He has been involved in Dawah in all spheres of society, individual, family, and community. He has appeared in major TV radio stations in Lagos, Nigeria. He is an office certified Sharia advisor and auditor. You will agree with me that we have capable hands in the house to discuss this issue with us. You are both welcome.
It's nice to be on the studio. And good morning, everyone. Assalamu alaikum. We hope to have a very interesting discussion.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you are just joining us, this is your Saturday talk show program, Everyday Muslims. It's time out with our guests who will be discussing the topic, blasphemy, a controversial issue. Before then, let's give a little insight of what it's all about. The Federal Republic of Nigeria operates two court systems. Both systems can punish blasphemy. The Constitution provides both customary system and a system that incorporates Sharia. The customary system prohibits blasphemy by Section 204 of Nigeria's Criminal Code. Section 204 of Nigeria's Criminal Code is entitled Insult to Religion. This section states, any person who does an act which any class of persons consider as a public insult on their religion, with the intention that they should consider the act such an insult, and any person who does an unlawful act with the knowledge that any class of persons will consider it such an insult, is guilty and is liable to imprisonment for 2 years. 12 out of Nigerian states, that's 36 states in Nigeria, have Sunni Islam as a dominant religion. In 1999, you remember that these 12 states chose to have Sharia courts as well as the customary courts. A Sharia court may treat blasphemy as deserving of several punishments up to and including execution. We have with us today. You will also remember that last year, a female student, Deborah Samuel, was gruesomely murdered in a state in Nigeria after she was accused of blasphemy due to comment she made on a WhatsApp group. Some suspects were arrested and arraigned, but cry for justice is still on after 1 year. Few days ago, while the celebration was on, another person by name Usman Buda, a butcher, was stoned to death on alleged blasphemy in the same state where Deborah was also killed. For Usman, just like Deborah, a rescue team was alerted, but unfortunately, Usman gave up the ghost. Even the police had little or nothing to do to save the injured and dying Usman. Investigation is still being carried out to know what really happened. Unfortunately, most cases of alleged blasphemy, the victim isn't alive to tell the real story of how it all happened, to defend their action and intention. Just like previous cases of blasphemy, clergies, religious bodies and individuals have come out to condemn this act, saying it is wrong and barbaric, which is mostly caused by ignorance. With sadness, tears, amidst confusion and controversy, there are lots of questions begging for clarity in the minds of most individuals.
Hello, good morning. I just want to find out, are we still on?
Yes, we are still on, Sheikh. Most individuals, questions such as what is blasphemy, why the killings, what is the Islamic view on blasphemy, and many more. Stay with us as we bring in our guests to do justice and give clarity to these burning and crucial issues. In few minutes, the lines will be open to receive questions and comments from our listeners. The number to call is 07000 917-917. Again.
Hello, anybody there?
Yes, we are with you, Sheikh. 07-00-917-917. If you prefer to use the SMS, this is the number. 070-317-56537. 070-317-56537. Here we are. My first question goes to Ustaz Abikebir. What constitutes blasphemy in Islam? What is the punishment or punishments for it?
Okay, Bismillah, Alhamdulillah, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Before I talk about what constitutes blasphemy or what's the punishment for it, we need to accept the fact that this is a controversial discussion. In the fact that this is a controversial environment, Nigeria is a multi-religious society, and of course, you're going to have varying views from various people. So one has to be prepared to cover all the bases as you discuss, as we have these discussions. And I think one of those reasons that can actually make these things easier for us to understand, it's for us to have discussions of this nature around these controversial topics. So I'm going to give sort of like a survey of the reactions that we're going to get from people and our ability to respond to them. We're going to have people who are going to say that no, this law, irrespective of the argument you put forward, irrespective of how airtight your arguments are and how valid your points are, because they know it's barbaric. And then, of course, and then the way they say it may vary depending on the attitude of that individual. And of course, some people who are responsible for the lynching of these individuals we've talked about, they're going to be people who are going to be, no, this is justified. As I've seen some of these on social media, some people say, no, there's nothing wrong with it. This person has committed a crime. And then you have to navigate this water of controversy to be able to arrive at a point whereby you make people understand what you're talking about. At the same time, affirm what is right. Okay, so blasphemy. So and when I was coming, I was busy looking at the classical Islamic literature. So by that, okay, it's going to be a more general audience. So I would like to tone down on the Arabic and focus on them things that is easy for us to understand. At the same time, I also want to say, I want to take out the air out of the bags of people who would call in. And then, so I'll say that number one, when we talk about blasphemy, you are saying that the action or offense of speaking sacrilegiously about God or sacred things, right? Insult, contempt of what is held sacred, profanity of what is deemed to be holy and sacred by others. This is what is called blasphemy. If you look at our dictionary, I tried to pick one of the easiest dictionary around to talk about this. Now, basically, before the particular era or environment we are in, blasphemy is universally punished. So it's not something that is Islam specific. Blasphemy is almost, I should use that word, it's almost universally punished by all religions. So for those who are familiar with biblical literature, in the book of John, the Jews wanted to stone Jesus Christ to death. And what was the allegation? They said because he blasphemed, claimed that he was God. So it was part of the Judeo system, the Judaic system, that blasphemy was punishable by death. And it's not only that, it's just my convention. We have verses of the Bible, Leviticus 24, verses 10 to 16. The 16th verse was very explicit. He that blasphemes the name of God shall be put to death. So, and I also did a survey of even contemporary Western countries. So a lot of them have expunged blasphemy from their books, of course, but some of them as late as 2021. Scotland removed blasphemy as a punishable offense in 2021, Ireland in 2020, England and Wales in 2008. So across history, blasphemy has always been punished, at times with some capital punishments, as it was the case in the church, as I've mentioned, and also in Islam, which we're going to talk about. So with that now, A person cannot say that, no, why is Islam so barbaric? You would have to defend these also in your tradition and your literature, because it's right there in it. So, but when it comes to Islam, blasphemy is also something that is punished across capital punishment, across the schools of thought. I mean, we have, when you look at the classical books, you have a consensus being related by scholar after scholar after scholar, and we have a very diverse jurisprudential history. To have scholars after scholars saying that blasphemy can be punishable by death. So the problem actually is not blasphemy or its punishment in itself. The problem is allowing the rule of law to take place. And as we mentioned in the intro, this is also found in Nigerian law, whether it is the common law or the Sharia penal code. Thank you.
Sheikh, a court in Kano recently convicted an atheist for making social media posts it found to be blasphemous against Islam. After a lengthy trial, Mubarak Bala pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 24 years in prison. What is the position of Nigeria's legal system regarding blasphemy, and is the law adequate and effective? Is it addressing the problem itself?
Okay. Firstly, assalamu alaikum. Peace be with you all. And thank you for the opportunity. Just before we go straight into that particular part, with all due respect, if I could just touch a little on the question of definition for our general audience. Another way of looking at blasphemy is to say blasphemy is hate speech applied to the sacred, applied to religious identities. And as my learned brother mentioned, this is something that every religious society has taken seriously, but the less religious a society becomes, the less they take the subject of blasphemy. So you can insult prophets, you can insult gods of various religions, and in some places they don't take it lightly, in other places they are becoming more secular. Also, I should add a little bit more of a footnote to what my brother said. When it comes to Islamic jurisprudence, scholars differ in how they classify and categorize the crime of blasphemy. As he said, it is contemptuous. It's not just saying something different. To say Jesus is Son of God, that is blasphemy. That doesn't go to court. It's lakum dinukum waliyadin. You have your religion. Somebody decides that his idol is his god. It sounds blasphemous, but that's not legal blasphemy. For a Muslim to blaspheme, or what is blasphemy, is when there's contemptuous, hostile attack against the fundamentals with the intention to offend the adherents. So there's a hate speech element there. And depending on the schools of thought, and this is the last point I'll make on that with your permission before I touch the question you asked. Some Muslim scholars, jurists of the past, see an overlap between what is called kufr, that is disbelief, between ridda, apostasy, between zandaka, heresy, and between blasphemy, which we don't really have a word in Arabic for blasphemy. Hmm. So it's usually what they call sabullah wa sabur rasul, insulting God, insulting the prophet. And so what some scholars do is to put the offense of blasphemy as under ridda, under apostasy, and they differ on whether it should be death sentence or not, or whether it is left to the discretion of the judge, that is ta'zir, or whether it is a fixed punishment. So just to mention that while here in this part of the world, in Nigeria, we are basically Maliki jurisprudence, and in the Hanbali and the Maliki school, there's a general consensus that it is fixed, it can't change. Whereas you find in the Hanafi and the Shafi school in other parts of the world, you have differing opinions based on how the offense is classified. So to your question on the case in Kano, you know, when the law says do not insult people's religion, you can be an atheist and that's not considered a crime in the state. You can, you know, you've got hundreds of people changing religions. This is a constitutional right in Nigeria. Mm. However, once you start to insult, you threaten social peace, you start to offend people, you are making statements that are meant to hurt. If you're going to insult the Prophet Muhammad in your room, then that is between you and him and God. But where you are going to come in public to insult Prophet Muhammad, then you are not doing it because Prophet Muhammad is going to be hurt by what you have said. You are trying to hurt the living by insulting the dead. That's what you're doing. And so when in the law of a state it is considered hate speech, the law takes its course, whether it is a fine, whether it is a sentence imprisonment, whatever the court decides. So we may feel the court or the law may need reform. We may have all sorts of views regarding it. But once a law is the law of the land, the need to respect. And I think this is where Muslims, Christians, leaders in particular have to educate their followers. Don't insult people's idols. Don't insult people's prophets. Don't insult. No religion teaches you to insult, to mock, to offend others. You know, have your religion, do your own. If you want to talk about, if you have a criticism to make about a particular belief, you can make it without insulting. So that's not the problem. I think the main problem the court had is, and I think my brother has already mentioned that in our laws in Nigeria, we have common law, but we also have customary law. And in the north, the customary law that is adopted in the north is the Sharia law. But in other parts, it is customary law. And in both laws, blasphemy is recognized as an offense. And it is the judge who will then decide how grievous it is, how hostile it was, how threatening, how offensive. And they will decide. So whether you insult another race, you insult a gender, you insult a religion, these are all abuses of the freedom of speech.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
In fact, apart from the insults, insulting religion, it's not even the best insulting your fellow human.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
Just an additional point. I mean, in some Western countries, just as my brother Sheikh Nordin Lemo mentioned, that the more secular the environment is, the less religious abuses will become crimes. So what you have is that the sacred is being given more respect now. In some countries in the West, right in the West, that you cannot insult the flag. You cannot insult the institution of the presidency. So it's law in France, I think, if I remember very well, to insult the Republic, to insult the French flag. And it's also just a piece of clothing. So one must respect another person's sensibility. Fortunately, in Islam, it is categorically prohibited for you to insult people's idols, people's وَلَا تَسُبُّ الَّذِينَ يَدْعُونَ مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ فَيَسُبُّ اللَّهَ عَدْوًا بِغَيْرِ عِلْمٍ. That's a categorical verse of the Quran. Do not insult people's idols, even if it's a stick they're worshipping, a rock, whatsoever, in as much as it's going to emotionally harm them. Then, I mean, you should not do that. And this is a separate discussion, of course. It's part of what we want to discuss here. And then the discussion around taking the laws into one's hand, which is what has gotten us here in the first instance.
Emotional abuse. If you are just joining us, this is your Saturday talk show program, Everyday Muslims, on 91.7 FM. And the number to call, 07-000-917-917. 07-000-917-917. If you prefer to use the SMS, 070-317-5657. 070-317-56537. Ustaz. Okay, you just lost that. Ustaz, last week, a man was stoned to death in Sokoto for a crime his killers referred to as an insult against the prophet. There have repeated cases of such allegations, and it's barely a year, just as I said in the introduction, barely a year that Deborah's case happened. What is responsible for all these incidents? Why is it difficult for the government to prosecute and punish those responsible for the killings?
Okay, so this is one of the very most important parts of our discussion. This is not a peculiar case to Nigeria, so I feel that there is a general thing we should look at. Post-colonial majority Muslim nations have this problem. You have this problem also in Pakistan. In this environment, post-colonial majority Muslim societies or environment, they've had this glorious reign of Islam. And then they have this distrust of the secular regime that has come to take its place now. So that's this something we should have at the back of our mind. That what is that relationship with where these things are happening? You realize it's almost the same in Pakistan. You have it, I think, also in Afghanistan. You have things like this. So you look at it critically. You look this is a very major underlying factor. Then when it comes to Nigeria, you have the weakness of the apparatus of law. People do not seem to trust state power sufficiently enough. So, but this is not a justification. When we want to talk about blasphemy now, we are referring to fiqh books, we are referring to schools of jurisprudence. In these books of jurisprudence themselves, you are innocent until proven guilty. You know, in Islamic teachings, one of the things the scholars did was to make sure that the basic knowledge of the deen was easily accessible to people. And one of those materials that you find around that was used to there's a vehicle for this is the 40 traditions of a Nawawi. Mm-hmm. And in a Nawawi's tradition, you have a hadith, a statement of the Prophet mm-hmm. that underlines this principle that people are innocent until they are proven guilty. Now you the point in that hadith is that people are innocent of whatever allegation until you are able to substantiate that allegation in a law court. There has to be a judicial process. It is not allowed, as far as Islam is concerned, for you to take the laws into your hands, create a mob, and lynch somebody to death. Not even lynch somebody to death, even hit somebody. It is not allowed because people are innocent. I mean, this is something that we've had right from the birth of Islam, that people are innocent until proven guilty. Now, you have two things occurring here. Number one, because when scholars want to define what blasphemy is, it has to be rigorous. We can only scratch the surface here. Then we have to, is it a direct abuse of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam? Is it a direct abuse of Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala? The predominant school of thought is the Maliki law in Nigeria, yeah? Not only in Northern Nigeria, in West Africa is the dominant law, and they are a bit more stricter. But in other laws, if the person blasphemes against Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala, this person can say, okay, I agree I blasphemed, but I've repented. And it is accepted, even with the Malikis, as strict as the Malikis are, they will say that wal kullu ruhji indana and tawbatuhu maqbula, is repentance is accepted. This individual is not even given the opportunity to repent. For of course, when it comes to the Prophet, it's a bit different. But even at that, you need to establish what was this person saying. What was the utterance? How did you determine it was blasphemy in the first instance? So the thing is this: our rule of law and our criminal justice system is still very, very weak. When things like this happen, we would come, of course, to educate the people, to talk to the people, to have discussions with those worthy of a discussion, but a lot still rests with the government. People who lynched but Deborah, who lynched, was the other person, the butcher that was there, should also face the law. Even if it was blasphemy, they would have punishment in the Sharia. And if they actually killed that individual in cold blood without having the ability to substantiate their claim of blasphemy, then they face the death penalty. So the Sharia is an entire thing. The problem we're having is you have very large scale ignorance, and this makes people take the laws into the. Of course, I mentioned the fact that there's a distrust of our criminal justice system. This is why, also in Lagos State, people are lynched to death for stealing phones. At times, it didn't even happen. I can give instances whereby people will be accused of stealing a child,
And this person was free of this charge. People have a lack of trust in our criminal justice system, and then it plays both ways. When they have this trust, when they see the efficacy of the law, they realize that, okay, if we take this guy to court, he's going to face the wrath of the law, and we're going to be satisfied. And they also understand that if we take the laws into our own hands, there's punishment. Mm. So these are the things that have to be addressed right at the level of the government.
For every action, there is always a consequence.
There's a consequence, yeah.
Thank you very much. Sheikh, do you have anything you would like to contribute to say on that question?
Yes, thank you. I think there's a sociologist, Emile Durkheim, who once said, where civility in the form of norms and mores are absent, laws are unenforceable. Where such mores are present, laws are unnecessary. So once you find a norm of people deciding to take the law into their own hands, whether it is a problem with a neighbor, going to court is too expensive, you might as well solve the problem yourself. Where somebody encroaches on your land and builds a wall, if you don't demolish the wall, ideally you shouldn't take the case to court.
Hmm.
But if you don't demolish the wall, they will take it to a height, and then after that, it's too late for you to do anything. It's like proof that it wasn't serious to you. That's why you left it. So when we look at every sector, we find people taking the law into their own hands, politicians taking the law into their own hands and using mobs and vigilante people to abuse the law. So what we find is when people at the grassroots feel the justice system will not help them, whether it's a case of theft, whether it's a case of blasphemy, incompetent people who don't know how to diagnose, cross-examine what constitutes evidence, they have not gone to law school, they have not practiced anywhere. But because they don't trust the justice system, they decide to take the law into their own hands. And so while, yes, they have done something wrong, the long arm of the law should pursue and ensure justice is done and people respect the rule of law, but let us not point the finger in the direction of the perpetrator only. Let's look at ourselves from the side of the educated, from the side of those in government, from the side of those in power. Are we not guilty of a similar offense? And so if we cannot ensure people trust the justice system, we should not be too surprised that they do what others do. This is in no way a justification. It is wrong. They should be brought to book. Nobody should be allowed to take the law into their own hands. When you look at what my learned brother just mentioned, even in Islamic law, the Quran can be very explicit and the Sunnah also on certain punishments for certain offenses. So if you accuse somebody of sleeping with somebody else and you don't have enough evidence, four eyewitnesses, you are given 80 lashes for damaging the person's reputation. Just to give an example. So the fact that the Quran is explicit on that punishment, no Muslim scholar understands that that is a punishment we can execute since God has already mentioned in the Quran. So the idea that the religion has prescribed certain punishments or scholars have deduced their own juristic tools to conclude that a particular offense should be meted with a particular punishment in no way gives even the scholar the right to implement punishment. So even though a divorce may be valid, a woman wants a divorce from her husband who is being very abusive, it is only the court. No scholar can break that marriage. He does not have the authority. So it's not about, do I even have the knowledge of the law? No, you have to have the authority. You can't be a retired judge and you are still giving judgment, you have to be a sitting judge. Hmm. This is both in common law and in Islamic law. So any form of taking the law into our own hands is a criminal offense and it must be punished. Hmm. But let us also understand the context in which this happens. And it is across the country and it is in every sector. It's how police brutality, all sorts of things. You find people languishing in jail. They have not gone through trial, 7 years behind bars, and the person doesn't know what he actually did. So this issue of not going through the justice system and the abuse of the system, unfortunately, is very rampant. And wherever you have that in the world, you have more extrajudicial punishments going on, unfortunately. Again, it's not justifying any of it. It is wrong. It's just understanding that it's not only in one direction.
Thank you.
Just to slightly corroborate what my learned brother has said. So even Islam, scholars are given two categories. I mean, scholars who have read the pinnacle of the understanding of our jurisprudence, we classify some scholars as muftis who would only give verdicts. They cannot implement punishment. And we have the qadha, the judges that he talked about.
Thank you. There's something I picked from here. You need. It's not just about you having the knowledge. You have to have the authority to carry out some acts. Sheikh, there's a general belief by some that Muslims in North and the southern part of Nigeria practice Islam differently. And this kind of belief, it affects the way we see, they see a lot of, especially the Boko Haram and blaspheming, the way they talk about it is so different. What are your comments and reactions to such a claim?
I think if we move around the world to look at how any particular religion is practiced, we will notice similarities in the fundamentals, but we will also notice cultural influence, contextual influences, historical influences on certain issues. So if you bring the scholars of the southern parts of Nigeria and the northern parts of Nigeria and you start, so I'm not talking about the masses, the ignorant, they have never represented any religion. I'm saying if you bring the scholars together and tell them, okay, we fast in Ramadan, when do you fast? They'll say, we also fast in Ramadan. We pray 5 times a day. What about you? They'll say, we also pray 5 times a day. And we also believe in one God and all the fundamentals. We go to Mecca for Hajj. We all agree alcohol is prohibited and we don't eat pork. So there are those teachings that are classified under a big term called Ma'alum min ad-din bid-darura. That is those fundamental, essential teachings of the religion. All Muslims agree. Once you have accepted that one, you're a Muslim. So we don't have two types of Islam, Northern Islam and Southern Islam. We just have Islam when it comes to the fundamentals. And once you've met those fundamentals, you can go to Hajj. Nobody will stop you. However, even when you look at dressing, there's a different way men and women dress in Saudi compared to Turkey, compared to Malaysia, compared to Nigeria, compared to Sudan. So you will always find that the contextual, cultural influence in how religion is practiced. When you bring example of Boko Haram, for example, it is good to look at where it came from. This started particularly in Maiduguri area in the northeast. And so it would be difficult to say, because it happened there, this is a northern phenomena. We can find big radical groups in different areas and they need to look carefully. Why do we have a big problem in one part of the country, not the other? So I think just the need to be careful about stereotyping. Having said that, I think in the southern parts of Nigeria, there's been a longer history of interfaith engagement. People know more about the other religion, and you do not have the overlapping identity differences. So, for example, if you belong to a tribe in northern Nigeria, in Yobe or Kanu or wherever, usually what you find, so I do a lot of interfaith engagement and dialogues. If we call for interfaith dialogue in Yobe, what we find is we need to have that dialogue in English, not in Hausa. Why? Because most of the Christians in Yobe are people who came from other parts of the country and are not indigenous people. They do have a few indigenous, but they are so few and they are actually marginalized by the majority that came from elsewhere. So when we look at Christianity in northern Nigeria, you will usually find they are tied to certain tribes and ethnic groups. Whereas when you come to the southern part of Nigeria, you actually find everybody is the same ethnic group, but within they have that diversity. And I think that has reduced the tension, because up in the north, you're not actually too sure. When there's conflict between one group and another, is this religion? Hmm. Is it ethnic? Is it indigenous settler? Is it majority, minority? These are all overlapping identities, and you can pick anyone and describe it as so. So I would say, yes, there are differences in culture, in history, between the North and the South. And this is just a big brush to stereotype the whole North and the whole South. There are diversities within. But I feel the fact that the differences between Muslims and Christians in the South, most of them share the same ethnicity, which is not completely true in the North. Actually, they usually differ in their ethnicities, has contributed to greater tolerance in the South and less in some parts of the North. Because again, there are other parts of the North that have been peaceful, no violence, no nothing. So I am a bit worried about a statement that people practice Islam differently here. I think people are different and their backgrounds influence the way they practice certain things, what they tolerate, what they accept. And it's the same you would find between northern Nigeria and another part of the country, or between Nigeria and other countries. You would find people practice Islam in certain areas differently. The Al-Majri problem, you will find it more as a northern phenomenon. You don't find it in other parts of the world the way it is here. And even in Nigeria, you don't find it in many other tribes. It's usually linked to particular tribes, one in particular. So I don't think I would buy into different Islams. On the issue of practice Islam differently, I think some aspects would be different, but they will all be opinions that scholars would justify based on their own context.
Thank you very much. That is to say that because we are different, the way we reason, the way we act, the way we understand things will surely be different. Thank you, Sheikh. Ustaz, what can Muslims and non-Muslims do to address the challenges of mob justice and jungle justice in Nigeria?
So we should. There's no dispute about that. It should be condemned. It should be fought against. So right from the question you put to Sheikh Kremu, there's a parallel I also want to draw to draw between the northern Nigeria and southern Nigeria. Mob action happens in both sides of Nigeria. Every part of Nigeria, mob actions would happen. The only difference is just that. What are the factors? Mob action is always, always unjustified. So I give an example in Ikorodu. A group of people, a car broke down. The occupant of the car and with about two mechanics were burnt to death because they were suspected to be ritualists. At the end of the day, they turned out that they were innocent. So mob action happens everywhere because of what we talked about earlier, the lack of trust in our criminal justice system. If you address the criminal justice system and you educate the people, it would disappear. So also, I want to talk about something that is also very important as a southerner, really, and as a southern Muslim. I want to emphasize that, Islam was
on the level of state power in Northern Nigeria. And then it seeped right there into the culture of Northern Nigeria. In Southern Nigeria, particularly the Southwest, what you have is a mixture, right? So much so that somebody said, "Wala aiba fi Yoruba ila anadinahum kadini Nasara la kadini Muhammad." That the religion of the Yorubas, the Islam of the Yoruba, is very similar to Christianity, but the things are changing. People are having a better understanding of Islam, and then it's changing the way we look at these things. So I think if we want to address the issue of mob action, we should be able to condemn it with one voice. The mob action, when the courts are there, when we have a sound criminal justice system, is not permissible in any sense. And secondly, which we've mentioned this earlier, we need to reform our criminal justice system. We need to reform the Nigerian police. We need to reform our judiciary. All these things need to happen if you are going to put a stop to this.
Sheikh, has there been any consensus amongst Islamic scholars based on Islamic sources of the Quran, the Hadith, and the judgment of the schools of fiqh regarding the punishment of blasphemy?
Number one, as I said earlier on, when it comes to theoretical, what is the punishment for blasphemy? Let me start with the practical. On the practical level, it's the judge that will decide. Yeah. So in practice, whatever offense is committed, let the person kill another person, let the person do whatever, it is the justice system that will look at the evidence, look at the crime, the gravity, who was involved, how certain is the judge, how much doubt is in the case, how sane was the individual. So in the practical sense, which is really what matters, it is the judge that decides, not a scholar. On a theoretical level, there is no consensus among scholars regarding a particular offense. So as my brother mentioned, so if you look at it, for example, the Maliki and the Hanbali, because they look at it as a clear offense, it's death sentence, some within would have differences of whether it can be pardoned if there's apology, just like what is called kufr, disbelief. Before you say a person has made a statement of disbelief, you need to be sure the person meant what they said. They were deliberate, they were conscious, their age, they were adult, they are sane, they are responsible. They were not with another interpretation, what is called ta'awil. It wasn't just a misinterpretation, but with a good intention. It wasn't what is called bid'ah. Bid'ah is a heretical statement or an action that is a counterfeit of the religion, has no basis, but is presented as a teaching of the religion, where some scholars may try to justify it, others would differ. So in those type of areas, it is not called a state, you know, it's not an act of kufr, even if the statement may be. The point being, on the theoretical level, those who put it under apostasy, for example, you will find scholars like Ibn Taymiyyah, Al-Baji, a Maliki scholar, who consider the crime of apostasy as ta'azir. Ta'azir means it is left to the discretion of the judge, even if the majority say it is a had. So again, you find the differences within the Hanafis. So regarding a consensus of the theoretical position, there's diversity in how to classify the punishment. And based on that classification, it differs regarding whether there's pardon or no pardon. But what matters is the practical. It is the judge who will decide based on the law of the land. And nobody should take that law into their own hands. If not, they are themselves guilty of breaching the law of the land.
Remember that the first hadith also says that actions shall be judged according to your intention. But unfortunately, these people have been mobbed and we don't even know what their intention is all about.
There's also a maxim that says good intentions do not make what is prohibited to be permissible. And so, This is where all we know is Fakumbi Madahara. We judge by what is clear. It is God that knows your intention.
Yes.
So God will decide.
Yes.
If you kill somebody, all we know is you killed somebody, we will take you to court. It is in the cross-examination and inquiry that the judge will decide this was homicide and it was murder, or whether it was accidental and it was manslaughter, or whether it was reckless behavior and therefore something in between. The theoretical side can be discussed and argued. What will finally decide whether you are right or wrong is the most competent human beings who have gone through the training in cross-examining witnesses and determining what your offense actually is, the judge. So on the question of actions judged by intention, that is between you and God. We judge by what we see and the evidence available. And if the judge makes a mistake, the Prophet Muhammad says, he still gets one reward because he tried to help.
Yeah.
If he was correct in his judgment, he gets a double reward because he also hid the truth. So we will always recognize that human efforts will be an approximation of the truth, but we keep saying, and God knows best.
Mm.
But actions judged by intentions should never be used by anybody to say, I had good intentions for breaking the law. We will take the case to court and the judge will decide whether to let you off the hook
or not. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Ustaz, in 1 minute, what is your closing remark to the government and the people in general?
Basically, it's a summary of what I've said. For I start with clerics. I mean, we should affirm what the rule of the Sharia is. The Sharia is always the Sharia is all wise. So the people, it is the punishment of apostasy, but there's also a process, just like in every other criminal accusation that we attach to people, whether it's theft, whatever it is, there has to be a judicial a process. Secondly, we need to reform our criminal justice system, right? From the Nigerian police to the judicial system, everything needs reform so as to give the people the trust in that system. And to our people, learn about anything you want to do, including your religion. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam rahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Jazakallahu khairan to our guest, Sheikh Nuruddin Lemu and Ustaz Abdulkabir Nasir, for their wonderful and insightful comments. May Allah continue to reward you and increase you in knowledge. I'm sure we all are better off with more information about the issue and appreciation of the situation around us. No society can be cohesive and thrive on mutual animosity, hostility, and peddling of hatred. The society gains only through mutual respect, understanding, love, and cooperation. We are not diminished, and our faith community does not lose by showing adequate respect for others, even when we have theological differences. In fact, society thrives more on the values that divine religions preach, values like love, tolerance, moderation, balance, and compassion. Like one of the companions of the Holy Prophet, Caliph Ali, radiallahu anhu, said in one of his beautiful sayings, "Every man you meet is either your brother in faith or your brother in humanity." I will leave you with these beautiful words to reflect on. Thank you for listening. Our appreciation goes to WFM for providing this platform and MPAC for enabling this program. And to our studio hands, the engineer, Timileyi, and my producer, Esther Alaribi, thank you very much. Until we come your way again, inshallah, next week, same time, same session, I'm Rashida Adetun Okiolaniyo, saying, Ma'asalam. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.